a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Welcome to First Day Affairs. Just a couple of reminders. If you're going to testify, please sign in the back. Make sure you have your badge indicating for whom you're, on whose behalf you're testifying. All discussion should flow through the chair, and those people who are now talking should not be talking. Thank you. At this point, I would ask for Secretary to please call the roll.
Representative Consett.
Here.
Gibson.
Here.
Gosch. Hansen.
Here.
Honhoff.
Here.
Keller.
Here.
Munsterman. Nostrup.
Here.
Parsley.
Here.
Urchio.
Here.
Wenk.
Here.
Cronin.
Here.
Lust.
Here.
Mr. Chair, there are 11 present, 2 excused.
I'd ask for a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Moved by Wink, seconded by Hansen. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed nay. We pass the motion. Those minutes are passed. Representative Hunoff.
I have a personal privilege.
Personal privilege granted.
Thank you. Appreciate that a lot. Say, I know you guys all know I do all the work at South Dakota Magazine, but a couple of the people who get all the glory for it are in the room today. Could I introduce them?
Absolutely.
My daughter Katie Hunoff and Heidi Marsh, our sales and marketing director, are here for the show.
Welcome.
Note to the marketing department. Use your dad's face less often.
If you believe what I just said, I got a couple of bills I'd like to have you consider.
Very good. What I've asked the Division of Banking to do, since we're going to have several banking and banking-related bills, is I've asked the Secretary to make some brief comments, and then we'll have the Director of the Division of Banking explore what they do for us. So with that, Secretary Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Pam Roberts. I'm Secretary of the Department of Labor and Regulation, and I wanted to just introduce the department to you today. Most of our bills go actually to the Commerce Committees in the Department of Labor and Regulation, but we have 3 bills that will come before you this session, basically because our trust bill is something that the chairman is on the trust task force with myself and our director of banking and several other people. So our trust bill, it makes sense to bring to this committee because we have the expert that's chairing this committee. And so along with that, then, we had a banking bill. It's a pretty easy bill that you're going to hear today, but we thought it made sense then to also have this committee hear that bill. And then over the course of the last several months, Governor Dugard appointed a trust or a captives task force. And captives is an insurance term. And the bill that we're bringing as a result of all this work from the trust task force actually has a lot to do with trusts also. So we thought it was probably a good idea to bring it to this committee because you guys have the background with all those trust issues over the past several years. And the captives bill has a lot to do with trusts. And I don't know if Valerie's in the room. Excuse me. I ran in from my car, so I'm a little bit out of breath. Mallory Barnett is a new attorney with the Division of Insurance, and she has been on the Governor's Trust Task Force, or Captives Task Force, I'm sorry, and she will be carrying that bill for the department. So be on the lookout. She will be here on Friday when that bill comes up. I think it's a pretty complicated bill. She's going to be giving a presentation, but I just wanted to introduce those 3 bills. And then I'll have Don Dovery come forward. You're going to help. Don is our director of public affairs. She works with all divisions. Go ahead and sit down and help with us if you would. She handles, basically coordinates all of our legislative matters. We have 14 bills, and Don is our go-to person. So if you have anything that deals with the Department of Labor, any of our regulatory functions, she's in the halls a lot, so please contact Don and she will get you to the right person. With that, I'll just quickly wanted to show you our organizational chart, go over our divisions. I think you have this in front of you. But basically, we're a normal Department of Labor. We have workforce services. We have unemployment insurance, which is about 100 people statewide. Most of them are in Aberdeen. They not only take claims on unemployment, but they also have the tax function. So they work with businesses on the taxing function. We have a workers' compensation program. We have 12 lawyers. Most of them do mediation on UI and workers' comp. Then we also have our three new regulatory divisions that we've had the last couple years, the Division of Insurance, the Division of Banking, and the Division of Securities. And I forgot about field services. Our employment services division under Mike Ryan has about 200 employees statewide. So when you think of our normal job service functions, they're in our local offices statewide. We have 15 offices probably in most of the communities that you guys serve. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I know that you wanted a briefing from our Director of Banking, and so I'd like to introduce Brett Aftal.
Thank you, Secretary Roberts. And Director Aftal, if you want to expound on the expertise of the chairman, and feel free.
That bill would not be possible without the chairman, that is for sure. Brett Aftal, the director of the Division of Banking. The division's a relatively small agency within state government. There's 23 total butts in the seats right now. We're authorized for 24, so we have one open position, but myself, I have two deputy directors, one for banking and our licensing function, and one for trust companies, division counsel, Brock Jensen, who's in the room today. Then we have 13 bank examiners, and they also do some examination of some of our licensed companies, which we'll talk about here in a couple minutes. Then we have four examiners that work full-time on the 65 trust companies we have. Then we have one policy analyst and one senior secretary who's also the secretary to the Banking Commission. Our primary responsibility is the state chartered banks in South Dakota. As of the end of 2011, as depicted in this slide, there were 61 of those banks with approximately $19 billion in assets. We lost three banks last year to mergers and consolidation, so we're now at 58 banks, and I'm aware there'll be one more consolidation that we'll be losing an additional bank here probably in the first quarter. So the red line kind of depicts the national trend of the declining number of banks overall. A lot of different factors for that, some demographics, some branching laws. There used to be a lot of advantages to having multiple bank charters, which have gone away over time. So now it's more efficient in a lot of different ways to have a bank with multiple branches in different communities. So there's a lot of different things at play there, but I expect that trend to continue to some extent in the future. But the next slide, at the same time, while we've lost some of our actual bank charters, we have not lost bank locations. So going back to 97, we had 83 banks. Today we have 58. But over that same time frame, we went from 213 bank locations to 237. So that's increased just slightly over time. And then the asset picture for our banks, like I said, currently we have right around $20 billion in assets. It's been a little bit volatile over time. There was a steep drop in total assets in 2008-2009, partly due to the economic downturn, but that was not actually the big driver in that. At that time, Wells Fargo Financial, which was a credit card bank, a state charter bank in South Dakota, was merged up into the large bank, and that was about a $5 billion bank. And then we also lost the First Western banks out in the Black Hills. So that was another, I think, about $2 billion in assets. We had a large loss of banking assets that left our state system. The First Western banks were acquired by First Interstate in Montana, so those became Montana assets. But then the jump back up in assets there is when Great Western Bank merged their Iowa and Nebraska charters into their South Dakota charter. So we did recover quite quickly on some of those assets. We talk a lot about trust in South Dakota. We do have eight banks in our 58 that have trust departments, and they have $4.64 billion in assets under management. So it's a pretty sizable chunk, and those bank trust departments are scattered out throughout the state. So our citizens have pretty good access to those services. The next slide is our biggest growth area. Clearly, this is the opposite trend of our banks. If you go back to 1997, we had one state-chartered trust company in South Dakota. As I sit here today, we have 65. So at the end of 2011, we had 58. We have 65 today, so we've added another 7 companies since the end of last year. And at the end of 2011, they reported $104 billion in assets. So we don't have the current year's number, 2012 numbers. We'll have those at some point in February, but I expect them to be quite a bit higher just because of the growth in companies, but also with the pending fiscal cliff, the estate tax was tangled up in that mess, and it was going to revert back to the $1 million exemption at the 55% rate. So I think there was a lot of additional trust creation activity at the end of the year. So I think those numbers will jump probably more than they did in prior years. And, Mr. Chairman, if anyone has questions, we can certainly take them as we go through or wait to the end, whatever your preference. The final piece of what we're responsible for, we have several different kind of licensees that we are responsible for examining. The banks and trust companies we examine for safety and soundness. We make sure they're doing what they should be doing to protect their customers' assets. The function on the licensees is a little bit different. It's more of a compliance function to make sure they're providing the disclosures to customers and following the state and federal laws. But we had the red bars represent the money lenders. I think we have 343 of those. Those are anywhere from the local payday shop to Honda Motor Credit, Ford Motor Credit. It's a pretty wide array of different kind of companies. The green bar are mortgage lenders. Those are non-depository companies that make mortgage loans. And as if you go back to 2007, we saw a pretty steep drop-off in that because of the financial crisis and also increased licensing obligations of those types of companies. Same is true for the mortgage brokers. They've dropped off, and partly because the blue bar that is added in there, the individual mortgage loan originators now have to be licensed, and in the banks have to be registered, so we're tracking those individuals now. And then the yellow bar that flows across horizontally are money transmitters. It's the most stable of those. That's Western Union, MoneyGram. Those kind of companies have, you can buy those services at Walmart or your local retailer. So those are another type of entity that we're responsible for. So those are the three main business lines that we're responsible for. The division does also have a commission of industry and lay people. The chairman of that is Jeff Erickson. He's the former president and CEO of Great Western Bank, who retired from banking but is still pretty active. And then John Lillibridge is the vice chairman. He's the chairman of First Fidelity Bank in Burke. He's the longest serving member of the commission. Paul Kristen was the formerly of the First Western Banks. He's from Huron. Richard Westra, who's the president and CEO of Dakota Bank in Aberdeen. And then Steve Hayes is the newest member of the commission. He's the president and CEO of Dakota Prairie Bank over here in Fort Pierre with locations in Pressure and Draper. And then Kurt Jensen's counsel. He's an attorney from Rapid City. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I have contact information on here. We'll be around all session. We do have one bill up before you today, but I'd be happy to entertain any questions that anyone might have.
Very good. Thank you, Director Aftal. Any questions for the director, for members of the committee? Representative Wink.
Thank you, Mr. Aftal. I have a question on the trust companies and the surge in trust activity. Is it because of what's going on in Washington, D.C., and that's going on across the United States, in this increase in trust activity, or does South Dakota treat trust companies differently that makes South Dakota more attractive to where they're setting up in South Dakota instead of other states?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wink, it's a combination of a lot of factors. I think we have to go all the way back to 1996 and 1997 when Governor Janklow created the Trust Task Force that Representative Luss is the chairman of. He brought together the trust experts in the state to establish our Trust Company Act to allow non-depository institutions to be created to, you know, undertake that activity. So it started out with wealthy private families establishing trust companies to do their own wealth management. But it's grown over the years, and there's just a lot of South Dakota's a good business climate. Our lack of an income tax, our lack of a tax on investment earnings is also part of that. For the trust companies themselves, we have a lower minimum capital requirement than a lot of states. A lot of states require $1 million, $2 million, up to $5 million in capital just to organize a startup company. And just our regulatory approach is we're here to help companies succeed and not, you know, play gotcha and beat them up with every little ticky-tack violation that we find. So it's a combination of a lot of things. And we have a great estate planning bar in South Dakota and a good infrastructure in Sioux Falls and Aberdeen and Rapid City for trust and trust companies.
Thank you. And I would just dovetail on those comments. And, you know, the task force really, I think it's the only one in existence in the country that a state has organized a specific group of people who are charged with making sure our trust laws are amenable to the trust industry and also subject to proper regulation. I think that's really made us the best state in the country to cite as a trust, and it's always a kind of competition between a couple different states, but we are routinely in the top three, if not the top one, and that really makes a big difference in the trust world. So it's a credit to Governor Janklow for creating that commission and those who serve on it to continue it, as well as the Division of Banking. I do have a question for you on the regarding trusts. Finding the staff to audit trusts and manage trusts, and how is that going?
Mr. Chairman, pretty good right now. We're playing a little bit of catch up. You know, with some of the economic pressures of the downturn, we weren't probably able to staff up as early as we needed to. But right now we have four people working full-time, plus our deputy director of trust, who's been examining trust companies since 2004. And I'd say he's probably examined as many trust companies as anyone in the country. So we really do have one of the leading experts on examining companies in the country. So he's the hands-on, you know, basically training director for those four people. And then Brock Jensen, our division counsel, also helps with examining the trust companies. So we do have enough people right now. It's just a matter of getting them to the point where they have enough experience to be able to operate on their own. That being said, I've been working closely with Secretary Roberts because, you know, last year we added seven companies. The year before that we added eight companies. I would expect we'll add somewhere between 5 and 10 more companies this year. And I don't know what the magic number is for how many more companies requires another examiner, but somewhere between that 5 and 10 companies is going to, you know, we're going to have an obligation to add another examiner. The great thing about how our code is set up for the trust companies is they pay a supervision fee to us every year, so they pay their own way. And then all of our out-of-pocket expenses for the exams we do, whether we do it in Sioux Falls or we do it in Cleveland, Ohio, or wherever, are paid directly back to us by the company that we examine. So they pay their own way. There's no South Dakota taxpayer dollars at play here. It's all generated by the companies that we supervise. So they come to South Dakota for our regulatory structure to be regulated and to pay for that regulation. So it's an interesting environment.
That's good. That's good to know. Representative Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Director Aftal, just to continue on that line of benefit, so the trusts come into South Dakota and they pay their own way, which creates jobs. How else do the citizens of South Dakota benefit from having these trust companies? Is there any downside to having the trust companies in South Dakota?
Mr. Chairman, well, there's no free lunch. There's always risk. With every one of those companies we charter, we take on some degree of risk. I don't want to represent anything to the contrary. We've had one company fail back in 2003. So that's the ultimate risk, is if one of these companies fails, because that takes up a lot of our time and resources to resolve that company, depending on what kind of company it is, how big it was, how complicated it was. But as far as the other benefits, you know, they do contribute to the bank franchise tax. You know, they pay fees to the division where we employ people, but they also, they contract with our estate planning attorneys and our business law attorneys, accountants. They rent facilities in whatever town they're located in. They pay secretarial staff. I mean, there's a lot of, it's not like the banking industry where you have, you know, thousands of employees working in the state, and I don't know that it'll ever be that. It's not quite as labor intensive as having a branch network where you're meeting with loan customers and things like that. But there are benefits, and I know that's been a discussion point of the task force, is how do we better quantify that to make it more clear to the citizens and the legislature for and the governor's office to make it more clear what is given back to the state for this environment that you all and your predecessors have provided over the last 15 or 16 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you can't actually put a dollar amount on the benefit to South Dakota citizens from this endeavor?
Mr. Chairman, no, I cannot. I think the franchise tax and a few of those things we could, certainly the fees they pay to us, but as far as how much rent they pay and how much total they pay and fees to accountants and attorneys, we just wouldn't have access to that information. But that it is an ongoing discussion. That's something that we're going to have to figure out how we get at least a better handle on. And they do. There's a lot of charitable giving, but even that's going to be hard to quantify because these people aren't giving money necessarily to get their name in the newspaper. Actually, a lot of them do it to the contrary. They want to be able to give and help, but they don't want people to know that they're doing it for various reasons. So some of that would be hard to quantify, but I think we can gather more information over time.
Representative Parsley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Afdahl, just a quick question. Is it in the code, the makeup of the banking commission, or I noticed that was all banking folks on the commission, or is that just something that's happened over time?
Mr. Chairman, the makeup of the commission is in the code, and it does require a certain number of lay people, and because, say, Jeff Erickson is no longer actively involved in banking, he's actually considered a lay person on there, although he does have that banking background. But they are governor appointments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is something the chairman and I have had a little conversation with and other lawyers. There's a group in Yankton who are just bound, determined to think that as we created this trust, and there's a lot of benefits to South Dakota, no question about that. But I have a group of friends in Yankton in the banking and legal community who think we're making it really easy with our laws for people to escape their or to shift assets and hide assets and qualify for Medicaid toward the end of their life. Can you address that for me a little bit? I mean, the answer that I've received from some attorneys is that the only people who are doing this are the very wealthy, and these are probably not people who would ever shed assets to qualify for Medicaid. Is that an accurate?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hunhoff, we're getting into asset protection trusts here, and I will just say up front here that is not an area that I, you know, could fill probably more than a thimble. In general, at least the trusts that are in our trust companies we're talking high net worth people. There's some of our trust companies that don't want to deal with people that have less than $10 million in assets because apparently it's not worth their time. I can't grasp that concept, but there are some trusts set up for special needs, things like that, and we do have a couple companies that specialize in that area, but that's not really driven by things in the Trust Company Act. That's more stuff driven in Title 55 under the trust laws.
Further questions by members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you, Director Afdahl. Let's appreciate that, and Secretary Roberts for coming in. I think that was helpful, and it's always good to get a good background on what you do and what role you play in our economy. Let's move into our agenda then. We have one bill, and Dr. Afdahl, you can stay there. We will now take up House Bill 1053, an act to revise a lending limit for state chartered banks. Proponent testimony on House Bill 1053. Welcome, Director Afdahl.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Brett Afdahl, Director of the Division of Banking. What you have before you today is House Bill 1053. This is one of those things that was buried in the Dodd-Frank Act. But I think for good reason. There were certain derivative-type products going on in the marketplace that caused at least some of the impacts of the economic downturn, and I think this Section 611 of that Act requires our state bank lending limit to take into consideration exposures to these type of products if our banks are involved in those. And really, I think the goal of Congress, the United States Congress, was to add transparency to the marketplace, because at that time it was an opaque market. Nobody really knew, you know, how many of these things were out there and what the dollar signs were attached to those. Fortunately, in South Dakota, our banks, we have very few banks involved in this, and they're involved in the very, very, if you can call any kind of derivative simple type of product, though. They're interest rate derivatives that they enter into to mitigate their interest rate risk. In the likely scenario now is in a rising interest rate environment. If they're locked in on long-term loans and long-term, you know, five-year CDs, and the rates go up, it'll compress their loan margin. So they'll exchange some fixed rate interest with another bank who will pay them a variable rate. That's about as simple of an explanation as I could give. But so essentially what we have to do is take into consideration an exposure to that type of a product in our lending limit, and currently we do not do that. So that's what this bill does. It will create two new sections in Chapter 51A12, which is where our lending limit is located. This bill does not authorize any kind of new activity. Our banks are currently authorized to enter into these type of products. This will simply tie them into our lending limit. There will be a little bit of additional reporting required of the banks. It's already in the system, though. The quarterly call report they file has a new line item for derivatives products. We bring this bill before you simply to allow our banks to continue to enter into these products. They're doing it to mitigate their risk, not to speculate on some of the credit type derivatives, which cause some problems out there. And we will need to issue some guidance to our banks to explain what our expectations are on this, but this is the first and key element of this, that we have to consider these type of products in our lending limits. So I think I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman, and just stand by for questions of the committee, but I believe there are other proponents.
Thank you very much. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1053.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the State Affairs Committee. My name is Kurt Everson. I'm the president of the South Dakota Bankers Association and also a registered lobbyist for them. Pardon me for my gravelly voice this morning. I caught one of the colds that's running around the Capitol building, so I apologize for that. We did discuss this bill with the Division of Banking prior to the start of this session. Frankly, you all had adjourned last year before we knew that this issue had even needed to be addressed. So I can tell you that probably 20 states have already dealt with this over the course of the latter part of last year. There are three, including South Dakota, who have bills in right now similar to this. The risk of not passing this bill in South Dakota is basically to the extent that state chartered banks would be dealing in these derivatives or interest rate swaps for any reason, basically you'd have no applicable law that would govern them, so that would create a problem for the banks. The Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, who regulates national banks, has already issued rules that tell national banks how to apply this new legal standard per Dodd-Frank, and so House Bill 1053 really creates parity and clarity for our state chartered banks in South Dakota in this regard. As I tried to understand the concept embodied in this bill, the best way I could think about it goes back to my old days as an ag finance student at South Dakota State, when we talked about the difference between hedging and speculative futures contracts. Banks dealing in interest rate swaps are really hedging their risk. They're taking a position in another instrument to offset risk in the cash interest rate market, as Director Afterall said. So we support this bill and hope you will as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Everson. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1053. Proponent testimony. Seeing none, any opponent testimony on House Bill 1053? Opponent testimony, House Bill 1053. Seeing none, we'll open up at this time to questions by members of the committee. I think this committee's got derivatives down cold. I think that's the message I'm getting here. So There being no questions, I would ask for action by members of the committee. Rep. Sam Gosch.
I move to pass.
Second.
Motion by Gosch, do pass. Second by Gibson. Any discussion on that motion, Representative Gosch?
Just briefly, I thought it was discussed very well and explained why we need this in South Dakota to protect South Dakotans. And so I would urge the committee to support the bill.
Further comments? Seeing none, the motion before the committee is do pass on House Bill 1053. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Konzett?
Aye.
Gibson?
Aye.
Gosch?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Keller?
Aye.
Munsterman?
Aye.
Nofstrup?
Aye.
Parsley? Burchio?
Aye.
Wink?
Aye.
Cronin?
Aye.
Lust?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there are 12 ayes, 1 excused.
House Bill 1053, having received the required vote, passes unanimously. I neglected to do one thing. Our lone page, could you introduce yourself to us, please?
Yes.
Just come up to the mic and tell us who you are and where you're from.
I'm Bevan Clapper, and I'm from Sioux Falls, and I go to Sioux Falls Christian. So.
Very good. Welcome. You're quite an active job today. With that, we've come to the end of our agenda. I would ask for a motion to adjourn.
So
moved by Virgio, second by Gibson. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. We are adjourned.